Welcome back, Nod Pod. Thank you guys so much for joining us for part two of our interview with Joey Rakusitz. And y'all loved part one. Like, I got great feedback. And also, one of the things I check, and like, not a lot of podcasters check this, but I look at listen through rate as well, meaning like how many people listened to the entire thing. And I like to see that the average listen is the length of the episode, right? Like, enough people were engaged, they listened to the whole thing. And his listen through rate is one of the highest we have ever had. Like, almost every single one of you listened minute one to the last minute. Everybody loved the show. I appreciate y'all's feedback. And I was able to pass that on to Joey. And hi, Joey, again. I know you're listening to part two probably too. Thank you again for your time. So we pick up today from, there was a cliffhanger at the end of the last episode. You know, he had overdosed in a hotel room, and we pick up kind of approaching that moment. And then we get into his recovery and how he eventually got clean. And it's a really great story because he was able to use, you guys know, both Nate and I are strong advocates for MAT, for medication assisted treatment. It can be super helpful, and it was really helpful for Joey. So he got on Suboxone at some point and was on it for like a year and a half. And he says it best. He was like, yeah, it helped me regulate my life. And where they were doing the Suboxone, they had a therapist that he was working with, and he started going to meetings, and that allowed him to regulate his life and get back in control. And then he voluntarily got off the Suboxone eventually, but it allowed him to find some stable footing. And it really can be so helpful for people. And it's still super stigmatized, but it can be so helpful for people. So if you're listening and it's something you've been considering, but you're afraid of the stigma, please listen to this episode as, you know, evidence that this can be a successful path for some people, you know? Oh, also, I realized when I was going through this, I didn't even ask him what happened to the dude that killed the girl. I can't even believe I didn't ask while we were recording. I think there was just like so much information that I didn't think about it. Neither did Nate. The guy got caught. The guy got caught quickly. And I'm actually linking the article in the show notes. He was sentenced to 15 years to life. So he got caught 3 days later, or after he had left, I think after Joey called him. So anyways, he does get caught, and the article is in the show notes if you guys want to check that out. Also, after our last episode, I asked for some reviews, and I got some reviews. So you guys, thank you. And this is one that I got, and this is really cool. This was on iTunes. This podcast gets me through it. So happy I found this podcast. It's been so instrumental in helping me work through and maintain my food addiction, binge eating disorder. Janine and Nate are fantastic hosts for interviews. Love the discussion so much. It makes me feel so much less alone. I love this, because my hope is that regardless of what it is that you are struggling to like get control over, something that's getting in the way of you having the best life that you can have. For me, also super binge eating now, right? Like, I put down the dope, but like, I definitely still binge eat. I've shared that with you guys. And like, I think it almost comes across like I say it kind of quick, and like, she's in fitness, it's, you know, she must just kind of be kidding. But like, I still do that, right? It got like subbed in for my addiction in some ways. And in fact, our guest next week, Claire Bays, we actually talk about that and exactly how she was able to use 12-step for binge eating too. But this review just made me super happy, because I'm really glad that somebody else could listen to this and get help for another, I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, addiction, I guess? You know, leaning into something outside of ourselves to help us process, you know, whatever that thing might be. If somebody gets assistance from us for that too, that's really cool. That makes me super happy. So anyways, thank you guys so much. Again, your feedback about the episodes is so great. If you guys follow the show on Instagram, you see what I do with it. So like, I post about the show, and then I love to post your text. And I always white out the name, black out the name. So if you say like, oh my God, I loved it. You know, like my friend Rachel was like, girl, what a cliffhanger. Like, I got to post that on Instagram. And it not only hopefully drums up interest, also the guest gets to see it, right? Like, Joey can see it and be like, oh, cool. You know what I mean? So it's just good all the way around. So DM me your thoughts, and we will see you next week. Thank you guys so much.
I think I texted you on 7-Eleven, and I said, you know, crazy thing about today is today I was dead in a hotel room 3 years ago, which was my daughter's birthday. I just kept getting high and getting high and getting high and getting high. And then I overdosed in a Motel 6, room 118, St. George, Utah. The two girls I was with, I couldn't hit myself with both needles. because it was too much. I put a gram of heroin in one needle, black tar, and then I put, you know, 3/4 of a gram of meth in the other one, and I figured I could handle it type shit because I'd been shooting a half a gram at a time. So I'm like, what's, you know, not a big deal. Must not have, I don't know. There was some fentanyl in it, what the doctors said. I went out. They rifled my pockets. They stole my truck. They went to Vegas to go buy more heroin, and they left me to die. Some girl I don't even know. Well, I know her now. Her name's Tasha, super awesome chick. She knocked on the door to buy a balloon of heroin, and I was dead on the bed. And she gave me mouth to mouth for, like, she said, like 10 to 12 minutes. And then the ambulance got there. I got 2 shots of Narcan, and then I got 2 more in the hospital. And then I got 1 more after that because the doctor said my oxygen saturation level was like 17 or some crazy shit. And it should be at like 99 or 100 always.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My God.
98%.
Wait, yeah. How did she get in the room? Was the door unlocked?
She knocked. They were in such a hurry to leave with my shit and my truck that they didn't shut the door all the way.
Oh my God.
And I still didn't get clean.
Oh, that was my next question. Okay, so you didn't stop.
Nah, I got out of the hospital and my buddy Steve went to go find my truck. He told me where it was at and he took me there and I got my truck from in front of that girl's house. And she tried to say she didn't steal it, that the cops told her she had to move it or it was going to get towed. And I was like, that's bullshit, whatever.
Yeah.
I got my truck and I didn't want nothing to do with them anymore. They left me to die, you know? And I tried to like not use for a few days, but I got so sick. Like, I mean, I was using really heavy after that whole murder thing. Like I took it pretty hard. So I tried to get clean. Like on my own, I was like, I can do this. And I just couldn't do it. I just fell out. And I had one of my friends bring me some drugs. I started getting high. And then one day I called my best friend, Billy. And I said, Billy, I can't do this anymore, bro. He said, you done? Because he had kind of wrote me off, you know, like he would let me come over if I needed a place to stay and shit. But we weren't really kicking it like we were. He knew I was in a dark place. And I called him. I said, I'm done, bro. Can you help me out? And he's like, you done, done? I said, I'm done. He said, all right, bring your truck up here. I'll park your truck up on my property in the mountains so you can't just leave rehab or whatever and come get it. Like, you're going to be stuck somewhere. And I said, I found a place in Vegas that will do a medical detox off heroin. And he said, okay, bro, I'll come pick you up right now. Or I drove my truck there and he rented a car and him and his kids took my truck to their property that following weekend. He drove me down to Vegas. I entered a medical detox center there for free, which was cool. I was there for 6 days and then they were going to put me up in a rehab. Well, they sent me to this rehab, right? And it was an old shot out like hotel downtown Vegas. And it was like during COVID. So I get there and there's like park benches and just all this ghetto-ness going on, all this crazy shit and people acting a fool. And you could have your cell phones there. And so it was mainly, I don't even want to call it a rehab. It was just a place for people to stay, I guess. You had to go to certain classes and stuff, but they didn't really have all these like fundamental things that you had to like 2 meetings a day or whatever. Cause COVID, you couldn't leave. I'm standing there and I'm like, I can't be here. This place is fucking crazy. I'm going to get high. I'm going to leave. I'm going to get high. I already know it. I feel it. And so I call my buddy, Ralph Clark, who has since passed away. He was a good friend of mine. I call him. He's running a rehab up in Utah. And I go, hey, man, can you get me out of here, bro? I'm going to get high here. And I took a picture and I sent it to him, a selfie of the place. And he goes, hey, bro, is that somebody shooting a shot on that park bench behind you? And I'm like, what? I don't know.
Oh,
and I look at it. Sure shit. There's a dude doing a shot right behind me in the park on the bench in the rehab. And I was like, he's like, I'm on my way, brother. And so he drove down, picked me up, took me to his rehab. He was like, I know you real well, bro. So, I mean, if you got stuff on you, just give it to me now. I'm not going to search you. I'm not going through your shit. Some crazy gangbanger that had done tons of time in prison. So he was just like, I trust you. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to lie to me, then that's fucked up because I'm helping you. So don't lie to me. Well, what did I do? I'm an addict. I kept a burner phone on me so I could call people, get cigarettes or whatever, because you couldn't smoke in this place. I was coming down so hard. I was good. And then I gave my buddy Dano my haircutting thing that's got my, you know, because he wanted to shave his head. And he goes, hey, bro, I found a loaded rig in here. And this is in rehab. And he goes, I just left it in there, man. I don't know what you want to do with it. And I was like, oh, man, if I was you, I would have dumped that shit down the toilet. And I was like, where's it at? He gave it to me. I went up in the bathroom. I shot it, got high, went back down, pretended I wasn't high. Well, because of that one shot, I didn't sleep for like 16 days or something crazy like that in this rehab. I mean, because I was already detoxed, medically detoxed, and I was able to sleep. And then I did that shot, and then now I'm detoxing again. It was pretty bad. I didn't sleep. And I kept telling the counselors, if you guys can't get me something to help me sleep, like take me to a shrink or whatever, like, you know, and they were like, we'll give you melatonin or we'll do this. Well, herbal tea and Reiki and all, whatever. None of that worked for me. And so I was like, if you guys can't help me out, I'll figure out a way to do it myself. They didn't believe me. And I did. I called my buddy and I got like a half ounce of weed and I went to an outside meeting and he handed it to me in a cup, inside of a cup. So there was like soda in the outside cup, but there's this other little cup in the middle that had the weed in it. So nobody would be able to tell. And I took that shit back to the rehab and I got caught smoking it in the goat pen and I got kicked out. And I went right back to using heroin right when I got out. I didn't stay clean. I just kept getting high and getting high and getting high. And then I started dating this girl, Kylie, and we moved to Vegas. We lived at her grandma's. God bless her grandma's soul. She put up with so much shit. And we were both hardcore heroin users. And we took full advantage of her grandma, which I feel totally terrible about now. I mean, I didn't care then. I lied and told grandma, I'm not getting high. She is. You know what I mean? I played the whole, like, I'm trying to help her stay clean and drive her to her methadone clinic when we really weren't going to the methadone clinic in the morning. We were taking grandma's car and going and getting our drugs for the day. One day, Kylie flipped out and she like thought there was bugs in her eye. And she literally, I had never seen it ever in my life. I'd heard of these stories of people wigging out on drugs and like thinking there's bugs and all that shit. It happened. And she picked her eye until it was this swollen, like, I mean, it was swollen and she's begging her grandma to get the bugs out of her eye, the worms out of her eye. And I'm like, I can't fucking do this anymore. Like, I just couldn't do it. I got in my truck. Her grandma gave me $1,000 to leave, was like, if you don't leave, she'll never get clean. So her grandma was like, here's a grand, you know, go make your way. So I took off. I went to San Antonio, Texas, and worked for a countertop shop there. They were building a federal prison. I took a couple grams of heroin with me from Vegas down there, but I quickly ran out. I caught myself sitting in front of the Walmart in downtown San Antonio. Hey man, you know where to get some black? Hey man, you know where to get some black? Sure. Within like 20 minutes, some dude's like, yeah, bro, I need some black too. And I was like, if you get me some, I got you some. I'll take care of you. And he's like, cool. And he took me down. I'd never heard of Street Ready. Have you guys heard of Street Ready heroin?
No.
So in Texas, they've got this stuff called Street Ready and it's mixed with baby formula so you can sniff it.
Okay.
Maybe it's called something different. I had never, you could literally do a line or something like
that. No, I've never heard of it before. I don't know.
No, it was just regular black tar heroin broke down with some Similac.
Okay.
Yeah, it's crazy, bro. And I was like, well, can I shoot it? And he's like, yeah, you can do whatever you want with it. And I'm like, fucking cool. So I'm getting high. I get fired from that job because it was a prevailing wage job building a federal prison. How I got let into that place, I have no idea. Like, they ran my record and they were like, you're good to go. And I was like, you sure you spelled my name? Oh, whatever. Fuck it. You know, like, it was a good money job. And I got fired because I was showing up, nodding out. I didn't have a hard hat. So they were like, it's a hard hat only job. The first day I was there and they were like, you need to go get a hard hat. So I went to Home Depot knowing I didn't have any money, but there was a hard hat. There was a dude's truck sitting next to where I parked and he had a hard hat and some shit in the back seat, in the back of his truck. I just jacked that shit, went right back to work. I worked for like 2 weeks before I got fired. I was on Indeed or whatever, one of those job monster jobs. And I've been in the granite marble fabrication for like 22 years, since 2000. I've been doing this for a long time. And I always have my resume out. And this guy hits me up and goes, how would you like to move to Montana? And I said, sounds fucking amazing. Like anywhere but where I'm at right now. I knew nobody in Texas, not a soul, except for the guy I was getting the heroin from, who was a homeless guy that slept outside of Walmart. I start driving and I remember where that guy took me. It was like this ghetto ass side street. And I was like, well, this dude's not answering his phone. So I'm going to go try and get cop this dope on my own and get the fuck out of town. So I drive down the side street and it's all these like gangbangers and shit. They're all kicking it in their chairs out in front of their, like, I mean, it's some ghetto shit. I'd never seen anything like it. And I'm from LA, you know what I mean? I'm like, this is gnarly. This dude jumps up and he's like, what you need? And I was like, I need some black. He's like, you want the good good or you want the semi good? And I was like, I want the good good. And he's like, all right, it's like 30 bucks a gram. I was like, what? Give me, I had just gotten that paycheck from that prevailing wage job. So I was like, all right, I need like $200 to make it to Montana and gas, which was I needed way more than that. Like way, way more. So I was like, all right, I got $400, man. How much can I get for that? So he gave me like 10 grams of heroin. I got a couple grams of meth to mix with it. I started driving, man. And I was shooting shots as I'm driving up to Montana. I got into Idaho and there's just something. I was had one of those epiphanies and I was like, I'm fucking sick of living like this, man. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't continue to live this kind of life. Like just my brain was going on and I was high, you know? So I throw all the dope out the window. You know, on the highway going fucking 70 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, whatever. I promptly get off, turn around and go back and look for 2 hours. Cause I'm like, oh my God, that's all I got. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I know nobody out here. I'm in the middle of fucking Idaho.
Did you find it?
Hell no, I didn't find it. I did not, I'm not even close.
Oh, and so no.
I get back in my vehicle. I start driving. And I remember I had a couple of Xanax and I was like, well, these will make me feel better. Cause like in my brain, you know, I'm shooting 2 grams a day, half gram at a time of heroin. Like that was my normal use. I was like, my brain's telling me, dude, you're sick. You're sick. Like 10 minutes after, you know what I mean? Like after I threw the shit out the window, I was sick already, you know, because my mental, then I started really getting sick. So I was like, if I take some of this Xanax, it'll help me. That shit put me right to sleep as I'm driving down the highway. I was swerving across. I went across the grass median up into the other lane of traffic and back across like 2 or 3 times. I had ended up like wrecking my van into a guardrail, not very hard. Like I caught myself and I just kind of bounced off of it. And I was like, ooh, that was a close one. You know, it dented my whole side of my van, but I just kept pushing. And then I saw a cop sitting on the freeway overpass way ahead of me. And I saw one sitting in the center lane and I was like, oh, I'm fucked. Like they know, you know, you're paranoid. And, but like just in my heart of hearts, I was like, I'm fucked. I know they know they're, you know what I mean? They know I'm driving all the way across the road. Somebody called. And, I pull off the freeway and pull up right behind the other cop. Like I just pulled up on the cop, like, fuck it. Like I know I'm in trouble. And he gets out and he goes, you know, we had 30 something phone calls about your erratic driving. Are you okay? And I said, no, I'm not okay. I said, look, man, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a heroin addict. I'm coming off heroin. I'm not high right now. I lied to him. I said, nor have I used today or yesterday. I said, I'm detoxing. I'm going to Montana for work. I'm trying to change my life. He goes, well, we heard you wrecked your van a little bit. So why don't you just pull it over, you know, pull it over into this dirt lot for a little bit and let's talk. And so I did. And we talked for a minute and he goes, do you mind, is there anything in your van that I'm going to find? And I'm like, yeah, you're going to find spoons. You're going to find needles. You're going to find uncapped needles. I'm a dirt bag. I'm a fucking piece of shit drug addict. You know what I mean? And he goes, all right, do you have any problem with me searching it? I said, no, I don't. So he goes in and he comes out and I'm thinking, I'm going to jail. I'm going to prison, something. Cause nothing good ever happens when I get pulled over or when I pull a cop over, I guess. just like your one guest, what's his name?
Yeah. I was just thinking that you're the second person we've had that's pulled themselves
Matt,
over.
Matt, yeah. Matt,
yeah. Yeah. I was just listening to that one yesterday, actually. And it made me think of it. So he goes, well, everything you said that was in there, you know, and he goes, lock your van up. I'm going to take you to the hospital. And I'm like, fuck, I'm going to jail. And he goes, just get in the front seat. So I got in the front seat and he drove me to the hospital and I sat in the hospital and they were like, we can't help you. We don't have, what do you want for us to do? What do you want us to do for you? You're coming off heroin. Like it's, we can't give you Suboxone. You're not prescribed it. We can't give you any type of anything to make you feel better. You're going to just have to, here's some number for some rehabs, you know, call these people. And I come out and the cop is still sitting in the waiting room and I'm like, damn, I'm going to jail. And he's like, hey man, I got you a hotel room for a few nights. And he drove me to a hotel room. And he goes, I'm not here to ruin your life, man. I'm here to help people. And he goes, because you were straight 100% honest with me, I'm helping you out. And he said, don't do, you know, don't.
Shit.
And he's like, don't make me regret this. Some sheriff from, I can't even remember. I don't remember his name. I was in such a bad way, but it was out in Blackfoot, Idaho. So he basically just left me in a hotel room for a few days. And I was like, holy shit, this is crazy. I just got let off, you know, this guy just got me a room, took me to the hospital, didn't take me to jail. Like if I don't get clean now, I mean, like this is stupid. You know, I need to try, but I'm still sick. So I look around the parking lot, boom, there's an old Blazer with the window down and some chick in there smoking. Looks like she's digging around for shit. Cool. She knows where to get the dope. So I hit her up and I go, hey man, I got, you know, I got some money. I just need to get well. And she goes, I normally don't do this for people, but you seem like you're legit sick and I think I can help you out. Like, do you want some fentanyl pills? And I was like, fuck it, I'll take what I can get. So I traded off my Honda generator that was on the back of my van. It was a Honda Predator generator. I traded that for like 10 fentanyl pills from her buddy. And I was like, can you shoot these? And he's like, yeah, I don't know how to do it. I'll have my brother come show you. So then this guy's brother comes and shows me, and then I'm off. All right, cool. I got to get to Montana. So I took off driving. Now that I'm well, I can drive. I didn't have any meth. That was okay. I had what I really needed to keep me well, which was, or not sick, I guess, not well, but not sick. And I drove up to Montana, and I drove over the hill into this place called Polson, Montana, which is on an Indian reservation. I didn't know that because I didn't care to look where I was going. I just cared that I was getting the fuck out of town, and I knew where Google Maps was taking me. I didn't look where I was moving to. I had no idea. I got to the guy's shop, and they had told me they were going to help me with housing and stuff. I got there. They didn't have housing, so I slept on the floor in the showroom for a few weeks, actually. And I finished off. I started halving my fentanyl pills. Then I started quartering them until I ran out, and I was doing my laundry across the street, the laundromat. I saw, like, are you sick of the way you're living? You know, are you an opiate addict? Do you need Suboxone or whatever? And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. So I took the tag off and I called, and they didn't call me back. So I called again and they didn't call me back. And I wanted that instant gratification of like, I need help now. Like, why aren't you answering? They called me like 2 days later. I scheduled an appointment. I drove from Polson to Kalispell, which is like an hour. And I met with this therapist named Kat, and she is like this totally amazing person at Alpenglow Recovery in Kalispell. And I think she's the owner, her and her husband, Chad. They're just great people. And she's like, let me see what I can do to help you, you know? And she had this doctor call me. I did this on over the phone doctor interview with a Dr. Dave, and he's the Suboxone dealer up in Montana, and he got me prescribed Suboxone that night. But I went to Rite Aid to go get my script, and they were like, I'm sorry, we're out of Suboxone. We won't have any for like 2 days. And so I'm like, I'm coming down hella hard from the fentanyl pills and all the things. So I was like, well, I'll go find the most ghetto place in this town and try and find heroin. I sat in front of the China buffet. I typed in places to find heroin in Kalispell, Montana. You know, I mean, I was trying everything I could because I didn't know anybody out here. I was brand new. I had some people tell me, go to this bar, go to that bar. So I was trying to find heroin, and I couldn't find any, and I got ripped off twice. Yeah, I can get it for you. I gave the guy $40. He never showed back up. I did that one more time the same night. Got ripped off. He didn't show back up. And I was like, man, this is a burn. I'm good. The next day, the doctor was able to get me Suboxone out in Polson at the Rite Aid. And I started my Suboxone therapy and I stayed clean. It got me to help me regulate my life for a year and a half. Wow. Until I took myself off of it like 8 weeks ago.
Wow. So when was that you got on Suboxone?
I got on Suboxone, let's see, September 30th-ish of 2021.
And you've been clean ever since?
Clean ever since.
Whoa. And you just stopped taking the Suboxone 8 weeks ago? How do you feel right now if you just stopped 8 weeks ago?
A lot better than I did 6 weeks ago, and way better than I did 4 weeks ago.
Right. Yeah.
I didn't sleep for like 6 days.
Yeah.
But also moving up here, I met a woman and her two kids who are super amazing, 16 and 12. Colton is fully deaf and half blind. He's in a wheelchair. And I think learning him helped me learn me, if that makes any sense.
What do you mean by that? Like, how?
I can't communicate with him. Like, we can't talk. He doesn't talk. He can't hear me. And he's only got one eye, one good eye. He was born without his right orbital. Just knowing that somebody out there that needed me more than I needed myself, I guess. I moved them in with me, and now we have a child together. But I had a baby at 40. Crazy. But Colton.
Okay, so did you start going to meetings and stuff? What did you do? Like, so you got on the Suboxone, and then what else did you do for recovery?
I started going to meetings out here in Kalispell. They have a pretty good meeting at the Al-Anon Center here. And okay. I started doing that. I was going to the 8 o'clock meeting. I was doing a few meetings a day. And then when Kristen got pregnant, I kind of fell off the meeting circuit, but I was still doing my therapy. Therapy was huge for me. Like,
okay.
Therapy with that lady from Alpenglow Cat. I would go meet with her. At first it was like once a week, then it was once every 2 weeks, and it was once a month. And I think just having somebody to talk to, and the crazy thing is like, she's a non-user, she's a non-drug addict. And I've always told myself through all the rehabs and everything that I've been to and all the people I've been around, I'm not listening to some book fucking worm that's never walked a day in my shoes. You know what I mean? Like, how do they know how to relate? I don't know how she did, but she figured it out, and she kind of figured out how to get through to me about things through therapy. And I mean, it's life-changing, really, like the way that her and her therapy and the Suboxone actually helped me regulate my life. I've been like a hardcore drug addict for 25 years. I had no top teeth. I just went and got those fixed. And well, I mean, I had top teeth, but a bunch were missing, just like the bottoms are. I'm getting my bottoms fixed soon too. But like, I didn't want to look at myself in the mirror. I didn't like myself. I hated myself. Even though I was clean, I didn't like me. You know, I got a sponsor now and I'm starting to work through the steps. I'm trying to go to more meetings. It's just really hard being I'm the sole income for a family of five now, which I couldn't even take care of myself 3 years ago. So it's been crazy. It's been super stressful. These are all things I would have gone out and used over before. Like, life is crazy. Life is stressful. Like, I can't handle this. And now I just do it.
So first of all, that's amazing. Everything that you just said, like, congratulations on finally stopping. I'm so proud of you. Like,
thank you.
That's definitely a story of like hardcore use, you know, in and out of prison, using forever. Like, when you meet an addict like that, or when, you know, and I was kind of like that too, it feels like they're never ever going to get clean. You know what I mean? And so 100%. I'm just so impressed that you were able to. What do you think was the turning point for you? Like, why was this time different?
I don't know. I mean, I think just the drive from Texas to Idaho, you know, to Montana, and just watching last year and the year before, I've had like 15 people die that I know from fentanyl. And it's not so, like, heroin isn't what it used to be, right? Like, you could be in the rooms of recovery, because I've been in and out of the rooms like for 20 years. I've always pretended I had one foot in, one foot out, you know? And back in the day, you could let a guy go back out and get high and use, you know what I mean? Oh, he'll come back because it's just black tar or whatever. Nobody's really ODing on tar heroin or whatever. I mean, they are, but they're not. Not like now. Like, you can't tell an addict, well, okay, well, you just go back out and come back when you're ready. You know what I mean? Because totally. Your next shot or your next hit might be your last, because you just don't know what you're getting anymore. And I think that scared me. Like, having OD'd one time and like being, you know, in the hospital for 2 days on breathing machines, and just like, that didn't scare me enough. They say you have to have a life defining moment. And I'm not really sure what my life defining moment was, but I think it was watching everybody around me drop dead.
I wonder if it was, because I've learned that, like, we have a bunch of different bottoms, right? And like, I hit the bottom long before I lived in that doghouse. That wasn't even the worst situation I'd ever been in, like, for sure. So why was that the last use? And I've heard people say that, like, I think it was a guest on the show said once that there's usually like an emotional tipping point before that bottom. And that's really when things start to change. Then the bottom is like shortly afterwards, but it wasn't necessarily that day. And I wonder if that cop being nice to you had anything to do with it. I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
It totally could have. I mean, I remember telling myself, if I don't, I mean, like, this is a one in a million chance that this guy's letting me go. And not only letting me go, he's helping me.
Right.
You know, like, knowing what was in my vehicle, like, walking into my vehicle going, dude, you've got, like, do you not cap your needles? Fuck no. Why? You know what I mean? I'm the only one in here. What does it matter? I had this little van that had a bed in it and a TV and an air conditioning unit, solar panels on there. I was tweaked out to the max, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, I called it a camping van, but I mean, it was a homeless tweaker van.
Dude, I was super gross with my needles too. You've probably heard me share this on the show. I was really gross with my rigs too. Uncapped, floating around. I dropped them in a porta potty, used them again. Like, really, 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 like you were saying, like, dirt bag habits with my needles, you know? So you experienced so much trauma, like, from that kidnapping. How have you addressed that in recovery? Do you think that's been through the therapy?
Yeah, I've definitely discussed it in therapy.
Okay.
You know, I try not to forget these things because I don't want to ever go back to these things.
Oh, right. Yeah. So this is the first time that I heard from Joey. He DM'd me this story. You got to share this.
So I was in Southern Utah working for a granite company because I always had a job. I mean, for the most part, I always stayed working. I just would work under the table because I didn't want to pay my child support. I was a piece of shit. It was easier just to get cash and not have to worry about, I'll just go into debt with the state. Who cares? So I was working for this guy doing repairs. I was out, stuff was getting installed by the crews because it was a bigger shop. If anything was off, I'd have to go fix it before the homeowners would move in or whatever. And when you get a chip on the top of your granite countertop, you don't want to put like a glue in there because a regular glue epoxy is dull. It's not shiny. So there's this stuff called fill-a-chip. In the box comes some syringes and some needles, but they're not like, I mean, it's a syringe and a needle, but it's like there's glue inside of them, like this glue. And then you use a black light and a clear film. You set the clear film over the glue after you spray it out of the needle onto the countertop. You put this little clear plastic sheet over it, and then you take a black light and heat it up. You set it on top, and then it sets off the catalyst in the glue and makes it harden. You scrape it with a razor blade, and then it's a shiny surface again, and it looks like you never had like a surface chip on the top of your countertop, right? So I had gotten some heroin, and I was jonesing super bad, and I didn't want to smoke it because like, who likes to smoke that shit? I don't. I'd rather bang it. I was like, what do I do? Like, I couldn't get a needle anywhere. Southern Utah, they don't just pass out needles at Walgreens. You have to like have a legit prescription or insulin or what, you know what I mean? Like they, cause they're super against the drug use in general. So I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm out on this job site. Oh yeah. I've got this fillet chip. I could just empty that out, sharpen the tip of the needle. Cause it was not sharp at all. I had a matchbook in the car. I had some sandpaper. I sharpened the needle. I emptied the glue out. I cleaned it out with acetone and I filled it up with heroin and I shot it right there on the job site. And I used the black light to test my heroin to see how much fentanyl was in it. It was a little handheld black light to see what was cut, what was fentanyl, and what was heroin, because it all shows up different colors, right, under a black light. So it was like my go-to needle kit for a little while. It was easy for me to hide the needle from right. Coworkers and stuff, because I would just put it right back in the same case and nobody would. I was the only one that used it. And if you were to open it, you wouldn't notice. So that was my like go-to when I didn't have anything. I kept that around for a while. Yeah. But I'm pretty sure there might have been some glue left in that thing because it was a really syrupy shot.
Of course there was. I guarantee you there was. But I'm the same way. I wouldn't smoke.
I'd rather
just
have glue than acetone.
Yeah.
That fucking glue. Fuck acetone.
I've tasted bleach still from that was left in the rig before. Like I've had a second where I'm like, uh-oh, I hope I don't die. Like I, you know what I mean? Like there was just like maybe a tiny little bit of bleach still in the thing, you know? So what does your life look like now? Are you still on parole? What does your life look like now?
I haven't been in trouble with the law since 2013. As a matter of fact, I bought my first car a few weeks ago that I've ever paid for myself. It's just a little like Toyota. Oh, wow. Gets like 40 miles to the gallon. I got my license a few weeks ago. I haven't had one of those in a really long time. Even when I was in Idaho, I didn't have a license, but the cop didn't bust me on that. I got insurance. I paid for insurance. I'm getting the car registered. As a matter of fact, I got pulled over yesterday coming home from work by the Montana Highway Patrol, and I don't have plates on the car yet. And he walks up. He pulls me up. He's passing me and he sees I don't have a front plate, I think. I'm guessing. And I saw him tap his brakes in my rear view and I'm like, shit. You know what I mean? And he turned around and I'm like, you know that I don't like cops. Every time for the most part, except for the cop in Idaho, I've always gone to jail. Always. Gone to jail, ended up running, whatever. Ended up catching a prison term, whatever. He comes up to the window and he's like looking at the car and he's laughing. And I go, it's not stolen, bro. And he's like, you know exactly why I pulled you over. And I go, yeah, I don't have plates. And he goes, do you have your license, insurance? And well, obviously you don't have registration because you don't have plates, but do you have your license and insurance? And I said, and I said, for once in my life, I do, man. And a bill of sale and a title. And he was like, okay, you know, and he took it and he went back to his car and then he came back and he's like, hey man, you know, you can't be driving this thing around. I said, well, I thought in Montana, I had 15 to 30 days. He said, there's actually no legal Montana doesn't have there's no law in Montana. There's no, he's like, but you can't be driving this around. And I go, well, I got to make it to work, bro. And he says, well, you'll just keep getting pulled over. I said, well, that's fine by me. I don't care. And he was like, all right, man, have a good day. You know, for once in my life, I didn't really care. Like I even slowed down when he got behind me. Like I know you're going to pull me over. I'm not going to even attempt to like apprehend. Or that was kind of cool for once. I didn't have to worry about going to jail. And my life is amazing. I have a 8-month-old son and his name is Jackson. And he's just an amazing kid. Like, I feel like this family that I'm with now, they were put in my life for a reason. And they've been nothing but supportive and really good to me. Both the kids are great kids, her kids, and we all live together out here. I work for a granite shop out here. I've been with them a little over a year on the books. That's probably the longest in a long time that I've been actually a legit employee on the books paying taxes. I've gotten a few raises in the last year since I've been there. I make a pretty decent living. I moved from being a fabricator to now I run all the CNC equipment and all their bridge saws and all the automated stuff. So I've kind of moved away from all the dirty work and now I'm just a computer guy, machinist, I guess you could call it. I have a pretty straightforward schedule. I live the normie life, man. I get up at, 5 in the morning. I go to work. I work all day till 5. I come home. I spend time with my son and my family. And when I can hit a meeting, I definitely do. We go to church on Sundays and my life is super, I'm blessed. I couldn't be happier with where I'm at in life. This is the best I've ever done in my life. I've been a drug addict since I was 16. Hardcore drug addict since 16. I've never made it anywhere on my own without anybody's help, except for now.
Wow. That's so cool, dude. That's so awesome. And how happy are you to be like a normie person? Like, I always thought people living a regular life were such suckers. And now I'm like, no, dude, we were the fucking suckers. It's so much easier to just go to work and pay taxes and be a regular human being.
You know how hard it was for me to get insurance because I was a non-insured driver for years? They were like, oh, you're a Title 10 when you that's basically a first-time driver. Like, nobody wanted to insure me.
Oh, yeah.
The owner of my shop's like, I got an insurance, dude. Hold on. Let me call this guy. And the dude's like, yep, here's your policy. Just pay the money. And I was like, there's the money. He's like, you got insurance. I was like, because I got turned down by like Geico and Root, yeah. Even Root, like the cheapest insurance online. They were like, sorry, totally. You owe us money or something. I don't know.
But that's what happens. We make our lives like so hard on ourselves. But I thought that I was living the easier way. Do you know what I mean? By like not paying for anything or like by not following the rules,
Right. Living off the grid, so to speak, and it's so much nicer to know that my money is clean hands or what is it? Clean money, dirty hands.
Yeah.
Instead of the opposite, you can't. When you're drug dealing and you're out hustling and stuff like that, you can't keep what you have, man. That's all earned illicitly. And it's just bad juju. So like all totally. The things that I have, all the things that I have and the things that I've been able to give to my family, and which isn't a whole lot, but it's a lot more than I've ever had. And it's all come by, old fashioned grit and hard work. And you were absolutely right with what you said about, what was that guy's name a few guests ago?
Bill, he's got like the cool Bill Tyler.
No, just like 2 weeks ago.
Khalil Rafiti. Yeah.
Rafiti, there you go. That dude said it best. Like, it's your hard work and your determination and the relationships that you build based off of your work ethic is what gets you places. Like, yeah, I don't have shit for credit and I'm so trying to figure that out. Like, that's hard for me. I've never had a bank account. I've never had anything that I haven't fucked over really bad, and so like I've never gone into like crazy debt with like credit cards and shit. They were smart. They never gave me credit cards, and you don't really get those when you're in jail or anything like that. You don't think about that kind of stuff. Like, so now I'm like, well, how, kind of like the insurance game, like how do I get insurance? How do I get credit? I don't know how to do any of those things. And I'm learning, like, and I've got some great people around me. My bosses are all super dope. Like, they know my struggle. They know where I've been. They know where I've came from. They know what I'm trying to accomplish. And they got me. Like, they're helping me as much as they possibly can. My family, same thing. I've gained relationships back with my sister who wrote me off. My sister's my best friend. And to have her write me off because she didn't want to be a part of me dying. And so my life today is super amazing. I didn't think I'd make it past 40 or to 40 at that. I never had ambition. I never had goals. I wrote a list of 6 goals 8 months ago, and I've conquered all 6 of those goals. Yeah, getting a driver. I've never written a list of goals. So for those people out there that are trying to figure it out, write a list of goals first, because that, I mean, mine was like getting somewhere to where I can smile. You know what I mean? Cause I couldn't smile before. I was missing a tooth here and missing a tooth here. And so, I mean, I'm still missing some bottom shit, but I don't really care. I feel a lot better about myself. So one was getting dental work. Two was getting a driver's license. Three was to excel at work. Four was to make sure that my family had a place, a roof over their head. Cause we lived in a homeless shelter for like 2 months out here when her and I got together. Like, we couldn't find a place to save our lives, and they put us at the Samaritan House in Kalispell, put us up for 2 months in this one bedroom apartment above the homeless shelter, and we didn't have to pay a dime, and I could save everything to help us get into a house, and I was able to. You know, five was to buy a car, and six was to make sure I'm a part of my daughter's life, and I'm all of those things now. I haven't seen her physically, but we talk on FaceTime, and we talk on the phone. And I didn't have that for years. And that was my crutch to use, was my daughter. Was like, I can't see my daughter. I'm so sad. I'm going to get high. You know, like, I use that as my number one crutch to stay loaded, I think was that. I can't see my daughter. I can't see my daughter. And that's such a cop out. You know, you can't live in excuses, or I can't anymore. I got to make solutions.
Wow. Okay. So the convict mentality is its own thing. Like that other episode that you were saying that you liked, Phil's. If somebody was listening that has a similar background, in and out of prison, you know, long, long, long-term use, and they need some like additional motivation to stop living that life, what would you say?
I would say what Phil said, definitely do not make friends with the people that you're in prison with. Like, don't contact those people when you get out, because that's the dumbest thing ever. Cause I did that for a while. Like, I made friends in prison and I thought we'd be homies on the streets, and we were. But for drugs and to do crimes and stuff like that. So I would say definitely to grow your support group with people that are not of that
lifestyle.
Yeah. That aren't in that kind of a lifestyle. It's hard. And I thought that moving around was going to change me. It didn't. I didn't change my circumstances. It just changed where I lived. It didn't change my motivation of things. My motivation was, no matter where I was to still get high. So, I mean, I would say do your parole, get off, go to meetings, find a support group of like-minded people that aren't wanting to be like that anymore. You know, there's guys out there that get out of prison and they hang their jacket up at the door and they forget all about it. You know, they leave all that shit behind and they move forward. And then there's guys that it becomes comfortable and you are okay with living like that. And I got okay with living like that for a while because I didn't pay taxes. I didn't pay rent. I got high. We could get in fight. We could run amok. We could do all the things. And we didn't have to deal with some nagging girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, because there's no chicks in prison. So, I mean,
right.
I mean, there's cell phones, so you can contact your girl on the streets or whatever. But right. That lifestyle is not the way to go, man. There's a means to an end with it, and it normally doesn't end well. Especially if you get clicked up and start doing things in there, then you're just a pawn for somebody else, because they use you in there to do their dirty work, you know, and then you end up catching more time and more time and more time. And then sometimes you may not get out. So if you really want to not go back and live that lifestyle, you have to make new friends, or you totally have to maybe be alone for, you have to be alone for a while. Cause a lot of people in there have codependency issues too, like, you know, and stuff like that. So, and addiction issues and that all that stuff goes hand in hand. So you obviously want to be around people, right? I don't like getting high by myself. I don't know about you guys, but it was always funner to get high with other people. So I guess my advice would be just to find sober friends that you can relate to that have been through the same thing. Like, I'm trying to figure out a way to go back to school so I can become a chemical dependency counselor for minors. I'd like to help kids before they hit 18 and make bad mistakes, because I feel like I've been through it, right? And if I couldn't learn, if I refused to learn or listen to people that weren't like me or hadn't been what I'd been through or I couldn't relate to, I wouldn't. So I feel like if I got into something like that, then I'd be able to help somebody. Because I've been there and I've done that, right? So you have to find people that you relate best with that can help you best in your head, if that makes any sense.
No, it totally does. Of course it does.
So yeah, thank you for the story. I remember you sharing the kidnapping. I remember you telling me about the kidnapping story when you first messaged me. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
shit.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Joey told me about that. But yeah, I think you definitely, because I've worked at the DJJ a few times, and which is like, it used to be CYA, but now it's like DJJ, Department of Juvenile Justice. So, and it's like, it's so crazy because that, I mean, a lot of those kids like grow up in that environment, you know what I mean? Like that gang mentality, like their Theo or their dad, you know what I mean? They're all gang members. And it's so crazy because like the DJJ and like Otay Mesa, it's like, that's like got like pictures and happy. Like it looks nothing like a jail anymore. It's like, you know, they've totally changed like their approach, and they like get mad and stuff. Cause they're like, oh, I'm in juvie, I'm down and I'm doing this and this. And they're like, they're trying to like go get locked up and go to prison and like do time and get their rankings. And it's so
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like crazy. Cause I'm just like, and what's sad is though, is like those kids have more resources locked up than they do when they get out. It's so crazy. 100%. And I'm like, they're set, like literally set up for failure. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yep. And
because the state makes money.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's like, dude, like you, and a lot of those people there, some of them just like therapists and counselors, and they just like want to help people, and that's cool. But a lot of those people there, I'm like, these kids are not, and that's why they brought me, you know what I mean? Cause like the way I live my life, and they brought Elon, you know, he's a two striker. So, you know, he's been there. But, you know, a lot of the, I would say, you know, because you asked about the, you know, the prison mentality, and a lot of the people that I see that get out and do good, they like, a lot of them take like the discipline and stuff that you have in there, because you have to program and you have to do this and this and this. And they take like that mentality, because that's a good mentality to have. Yeah. And they take that and they try to build something positive around that. Because, I mean, most of the people that I know that have done time are some of the most respectful people that I know, because that's just like, you have to be that way. Or you get the shit beat out of you, or worse. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they build off that. Because you remind me a lot of my friend Carter, because he, you know, he's done a lot of time and stuff like that. And it's just, you know, once you get in the system, it's so hard to get out of it. You just, it's a revolving door, you know? And
in California, when I was doing prison time, I believe it was the state paid the facility $337 a day to house one inmate. So as long as they keep that shit full, they're bringing money in. You know what I mean? And you get shitty meals. And I mean, like, how is this funded like that? You know, like $330 a day for me to stay here in the shithole where you get like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
That's so much money.
Yeah.
That's crazy. That is so much money.
Yeah. Oh, bottom dollar prison term is like $30,000 a year. So I mean, so if you get 6 years, you know what I mean? That's a lot of money. You could take that money and like totally change someone's life with it.
Of course.
And then, you know what I mean? But it's, there's the prison industrial complex and all that stuff like that. You know, thankfully things have changed somewhat, you know, in some states, you know, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. Most people that get in, and like you said, you go in there and you just like, if you start clicking up and getting in the car with people, you know what I mean? You got to do missions. Like you don't have a choice, and then you're getting more time. You know what I mean? That's just the way it 100%. Is, you know, it's just like, it's a vicious cycle.
I swallowed 20 balloons of heroin to take it from one prison to the next prison. When I went from one prison to the next, cause these dudes are like, hey man, I need you to mule this shit. And I was like, cool. So it was like 20 grams of heroin, and I lost one of the balloons, and they were pretty upset about it. But I was like, it literally didn't come out when I, you know, dropped this. I don't know what happened to it. We couldn't find it. Maybe they digging through my shit. They couldn't find it. I don't know. But
oh my gosh.
That's a lot of heroin. You're lucky that didn't bust.
Yeah. You're lucky that didn't. I mean, you would have, How did you avoid, I mean, you didn't avoid it. I mean, you did have to do some of that stuff while you were in, right? Because that is.
You do what you have to do when you're in there. You have to take care of what you're told to take care of, or you get took care of.
Yeah.
It's just what it is. There's a hierarchy. Like I said, you're just a, you know, especially when you first come in, you want to put, I don't know. I just wanted to get my shit out of the way. So I raised my hand to put in work wherever I could just to get it out of the way. You know what I mean? Like I didn't want to have to be called on like, hey, you haven't done your, you know, you haven't put in work or whatever. Cause I rode with the Kern County car. Cause I got arrested, you know, out of Bakersfield and shit. So I didn't ride with the LA County car. I rode in Kern with the guys from Kern County, and they're all a bunch of dirt bags. Love them, but a bunch of dirt bags.
Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough.
Yeah. Thank
for,
you. Yeah.
For great, sharing your story. That's amazing. I mean, yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I was like trying to figure out how I'd fit it all in with you guys, but I think I did all right.
No, you did. You totally did. Yeah, you did great. Did you say everything you wanted to say? Was there anything else that you would want to add?
I think I'm just thankful for finding your guys' podcast, because it really has like, so, well, we didn't talk about my Suboxone kick, I don't think too much, but when I was kicking Suboxone, I still sleep on the floor in the living room because I'm afraid that I'm going to elbow my fiance in the night, because I toss and turn so much still. Like I still have restless leg syndrome, and we've got a baby now that in the middle of the night, he gets in bed with her because he wants to be awake and drink his bottle or whatever. And I'm afraid I'm going to hurt them. So like I spent the 6 nights that I was awake, I spent listening to your podcast, like from start to finish. Cause I was like, fuck, I just want to go get high. Like I did, I didn't want to feel like that anymore. But part of the reason why I didn't want to take anything while I was getting off of Suboxone, like, cause I could have went and got like sleeping meds from my doctor or something. I was like, I think I need to feel every fucking bit of this. So I remember it. Like you have to feel the pain, you know, and I felt every bit of it, but thankfully, like between music and your podcast, like there's been so much great things that have come out of listening to all of your guests and the things that you guys have to share that have helped me drastically in my recovery. Because like I said, your podcast is more my recovery than me going to a meeting. Cause I can't do that all the time. So.
Dude, I just got, that's,
I see them.
Yeah. I'm so honored that you just said that. Like, I can't believe it helped you through a kick. Like, that means the world to me that you just told me that. It's why we're doing this. Yeah, that was always my dream. Like, that was my goal, is to talk to the person that, because even though I have 8 years, I still feel really, really, really close to the stories you told, right? And I don't know that I'll ever not feel that close. You know what I mean? Like, even 8 years later, like, that still feels more my life than this one, you know, still. And like, that's who I'm still really talking to a lot, is the person that still feels that way. And the use was so gnarly, and it was all the time, and it was homelessness. And like the fact that that did reach somebody and that you found it and that it helped you is like just amazing. I'm so glad that you told me that.
And I'm not just saying it to give you a big head or nothing. I mean that like wholeheartedly. Like I feel like there were some times where I wanted to go back out and get high, and I just throw on your podcast and like listen to it while I was going through some shit in my head. And I went through a pretty hard depression time, like coming down off the Suboxone. Like, I mean, obviously with lack of sleep and stuff like that, like it's a rough one. And I feel like it was honestly worse than coming down off heroin.
Yeah.
Well, I was taking 3 strips a day. The doctor gave me 3 strips a day. And I was doing 3 strips a day. And then I took myself to 2, then to 1, and then from 1 to a 16th in a month. And that was, so, I mean, I actually detoxed for longer than 8 weeks, because I started my taper from like 2 months prior. I started going from 2, I went from 2 to 1 down to, you know, I was chopping it up into a 16th until I had nothing left. And then I was like, okay, we got to do this shit. It's got to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to get off subs, even if it's just a tiny bit. Well, thank you so much, Joey. I appreciate your time and your story so much. I'm so glad that you reached out to us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate you guys allowing me to be a part of this, because I feel like maybe there's somebody out there like me that'll hear it and it'll help as well as your guys' guests, and you guys have helped me. I'm not like big in social media and stuff like that. Like I just started a new Facebook page, and because I got rid of all the old people that I didn't want to talk to anymore. And I don't have followings of people and stuff. So I'm really grateful that, because like all the people you guys talk to are like, you know, social media influencers. And
sometimes. Like sometimes.
But I love Martin Lockett. I had to listen to that guy in a DUI class one time years ago. And then I heard
it.
Oh, yeah. They make you watch his video to pass a DUI class.
Oh, shit. Oh, my God. That's so funny. That's while he was still in prison, you watched it? Because he only just got out a few years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did it from prison. Okay. If you look, he's got this whole video. It might even be on YouTube, and they make you watch it to pass a DUI class.
Oh my gosh, you didn't actually interview him with me, mm-hmm. but he killed 2 people on New Year's Eve and did like.
No, I know. I remember the episode.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Sometimes people are like Khalil. You know, Khalil's got 300,000 followers or something like that. But like the addiction story from the people that just like listen to the show, those are great. You know what I mean?
Those have been better than some of the other ones.
For sure.
To be honest,
Nate likes those better anyway. Yeah. So
I mean, some of the other ones.
I know exactly which one you're thinking
about.
I felt
like I was in like school or something.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I just want to say I'm super honored, and I'm extremely thankful for the spot on the show today. It means a lot to me, because I'm giving back to something that you guys have so freely given to me. So.
Well, thank you so much. Do you want to leave your social media so people can connect with you, or does that matter to you?
No, you can leave it.
What's your Instagram?
I think it's just Joey Rakicits. Yeah, it's just Joey Rakicits on Facebook. And it's the same thing. It's the same thing on Instagram. I think I have like 2 friends on Instagram. It's you and Khalil.
Okay. Oh, you friended Khalil. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I spoke with him,
so
actually.
Cool.
Yeah,
you actually, did? What did you say? Yeah,
I told him I appreciated what he had to say, and it hit home. And you know, I kind of shared a little bit of my story, and he was like, "That's awesome, dude. Good job. Keep going." And we talked for a minute. But
did you tell him you heard him on Chasing Heroin?
Oh yeah, 100%. I was like, "Dude, you killed it on Chasing Heroin. That's why I'm reaching out, because I appreciate, you know, your story." And so yeah, no, he was
totally cool. No, he's like the nicest guy. You know, yeah, like I was a little nervous to meet him, but he's like the nicest guy.
Probably how I'm nervous to meet you guys.
Yeah, but then you see we're just idiots with a pug barking in the background. So, okay, well, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so, so much for your time. If I have any questions or anything, I'll reach out. If you have any questions or anything, just reach out.
Yeah, just hit me up.